Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey and welcome to ScaryCast. We're so glad to have everybody here on WLSC AM and FM and WTWW Nashville, shortwave for the world. We're going to have a great show tonight and so glad everybody is here with us. So let's get going. We'll introduce our panelists. First of all, the Queen of ScaryCast has returned. We're so glad to have her. She is such a light on this show, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I am doing great. I'm so glad to be back with everybody.
Well, we are glad to have you here. I'm going to tell you that. It's great to have you here. As I said, you're just a real light on this show, a bright light, and we're so glad
thanks.
To have you. And the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you, Dr. Trey?
I'm great, John. Having a nice day today.
Well, that's good. I know you gave a talk today, and you're all energized and everything, so we're excited to have you here. And our man from West Hollywood, the one and only Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here. I'm, driving home right now, so I apologize for the noise, but I'll be back at home and back on the call in just a little bit.
Well, we're always glad to have you. I mean, we can't do it. We haven't been able to do it for 5 years without Devin Tate. He is our original cast member, so we're so glad to have you here. And from Niagara Falls, Canada, the one and only, our producer on YouTube, Mark Johnston. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
John, I'm doing excellent. It's always an honor and pleasure being on your show. I'm out here fishing up in Canada. It's a little chilly at the moment, but try to keep warm and hopefully see a UFO in the stars when we look up during the podcast. That would be appropriate for this.
You better believe it. We'll hope that you see a UFO and you can tell us all about it. Okay, well, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, tonight we've got a very special guest. I think we're going where very few podcasts have ever gone. I met this fellow on Facebook, and he is one of the most engaging and entertaining people, and he is, by trade, a sorcerer. And I'll tell you what, when I've told people we were going to have a sorcerer on the show, they said, oh, my goodness, I'll see you later. Oh, come on. It's really great. We love viewpoints that are not standard here. We're excited about having him. So welcome from Cullman, Alabama, Jason McClendon. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you. Glad to be here.
We are glad to have you. We've had some lively and spirited discussions on the way to ScaryCast. We're so glad to have you here. I think what I'd like to do is I had asked you to give us some definitions because I think a lot of people, now Robin knows what a sorcerer is, and you're a little bit of an off-take on a sorcerer because you're something called a white sorcerer. You're kind of a good guy that casts spells. Now, that's all I'm going to say. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to start off by asking you a couple of questions. Sorcerers tend to come, I believe, from the Wiccan world. Is that correct?
Well, as far as the Wiccan world, like sorcerer, the way the word comes from is just someone who does magic or divination. The Wiccan religion. Does practice something that could be considered sorcery or some members of the Wiccan religion. It's really something that kind of goes back a long, long time. Like, as far as I know it could be traced back. I know there's the Druids, which is where Wicca comes from. But then the practice of sorcery, as I define it, just as magic in general, goes back, I believe, even prehistoric times.
Right, and we had discussed that, and the fact is, there are people who do magic or perform magic in terms of the Wiccan religion, and we call them witches and perhaps warlocks. So if you could explain the witches and warlocks thing, and then we're going to ask you to define really what a sorcerer is. So tell us a little bit about witches and warlocks, kind of the way that they describe it in the Wiccan religion.
Yeah, well, I'm not too familiar with the actual Wiccan religion, so I don't want to, you know, mislead anyone or anything, but the way I understand it is they practice it's a very natural religion, very based off of how nature works, the cycles of the moon, the seasons and things like that, and their practice is rooted in things of nature, stones, sticks, herbs, lots of herbs, and things like that.
Okay, and I guess witches and warlocks tend to be folks that practice magic through the Wiccan religion, correct? That'd be a good general way to describe them, right?
Yes.
Okay, but now you are a sorcerer, and you are slightly different. You are different from the standard spell casting of Wiccans and witches and warlocks. So tell us a little bit about what you do and how we can understand how you are different from the standard witches and warlocks that go around and cast spells and do whatever.
All right. Well, the way that I define a sorcerer and the reason I call myself a sorcerer rather than a witch or a warlock has mostly to do with the way that those terms are perceived in modern society, or at least in the Western society that I know of. And that's that witches tend to be seen as more feminine and more having to do with things like the moon, more in line with the pagan religious holidays, the Sabbaths, and things like that. And as far as like a magician, you know, usually if it's there, people are not thinking of a stage magician. They're the more ceremonial, wearing robes and walking in circles and going about in like lodges or performing spiritual development exercises. And the reason I define myself as a sorcerer and the way I see a sorcerer as being different from these other definitions is that when you hear sorcerer, you know this person does magic. They get their hands dirty with practicing spells, you know, developing their psychic abilities, conjuring spirits, things like that. So the reason I define myself as a sorcerer is because this is what I do. That is the practice that I engage in.
Well, now, Robin, that's very interesting because that sounds like many of the conversations that you and I have, doesn't it?
I just to be clear, not that I can't. I don't do spells. I do have a banishment of evil thing that I know how to do, but it's not, I don't consider it a spell. I guess if you were to put it in that category, it would be white magic. But I don't do magic as a rule. I'm not saying there's anything against it, not condemning anybody. I just don't. You know, the Bigfoots do their own form of magic, but that's a little bit different than what he's referring to. In fact, they have magic parties. Who would have thought? You know, I mean, they do, like, when you get Beltane and you get these full moons and stuff, they will have what they call magic parties. But in their world, the magic is more what we call the woo, which is the paranormal abilities, and most of it is done through energy, so it's not so much spells. That being said, they've done different healings, like on myself as well as other people and each other, where they will chant, but it's not technically a true spell. So as far as our conversations that John's referring to, yes, we've talked about things like this. Again, not condemning anything, so please don't take that offensively because I certainly do not mean it that way. Just as far as what I do energy work, which means I'm going to take the energy from my own body and create various things, whether it's healing somebody, moving weather, you know, protection bubbles, those kind of things. So it's a little bit different.
Right. I guess it's a little bit different, but it has somewhat of the same purpose. There's a reason for doing it, and hopefully there's a good outcome for it, because I know that one thing that Jason has taught me, that he is very much a white sorcerer. So, Jason, if you could tell
That's
us
wonderful.
A little bit about the difference between a white sorcerer and a dark sorcerer.
Okay, yeah. And just to touch a little bit on what Robin was saying a minute ago about energy work and things like that, I think that's really cool. And in fact, in the occult sciences of how a lot of spells actually work, a lot of the mechanics are actually based off of the same mechanics. But that's really cool. But now a white sorcerer, as the way I define it, as in opposition to a dark sorcerer, again, kind of comes from the your typical idea of a sorcerer. When you hear the word sorcerer, you think of like this evil cloaked figure in a dark castle or in a dungeon or something, conjuring up demons to go and destroy a city or something of that nature. And the way I define a white sorcerer in light of this perception, what a sorcerer is that, what we do, I see sorcery itself as kind of like a skill, kind of like martial arts. You know, you can learn defensive stuff, offensive stuff that just makes your life generally easier. It's not even really about the combat, but there's stuff that can just help you, like you become more limber and things like that. The practice of sorcery and magic has a lot of offensive stuff, defensive stuff, and things like that. But what it ultimately comes down to is, like, anyone that practices magic for an extended period of time, you naturally gain some spiritual development. You know, you become a better person just because of what you're doing and what you're working with. And in that, a lot of the sorcerers I know, throughout their development, they've kind of gained an unwritten code of ethics. You know, what we do is basically, you know, just treat other people the way that you would like to be treated. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, just the golden rule, you know. But, and like, you know, if you look at a lot of, like, the more traditional and ancient grimoires, there is a lot of very dark and stuff in there. It's traditional, but it's definitely unethical. I wouldn't condone using any of it. Some of the methods are even considered unethical, like even from a spiritual perspective, because you're bullying or forcing a spirit to do something by threat of violence to the spirit. And, you know, I wouldn't want that done to me as a spirit either. So even if you're using that for a good purpose, the fact of the matter is you're still, you know, you're still bullying another living thing, or it can be considered a living thing, even if it's from the other side.
Well, now, you mentioned a grimoire. What is a grimoire? Because a lot of us are not familiar with that term.
Right.
Which
a grimoire.
One is it that you have? Because there's two.
Do I know?
Which grimoire do you have? There's two.
Which grimoire?
There's more than one.
There's several grimoires. A grimoire is more of a classification rather than a name of a specific book. But it's essentially a wizard's manual, like a handbook of spells.
Right.
And,
but they
yeah,
have the
spirit
dark
catalog.
One and the white one or the light one.
Yeah, well, there's not really so much as a clear-cut, like, difference, and some of them will have a little of both. They're kind of like just records of experiments that have been compiled and things like that, but there's different, and depending on the philosophy and the region and main viewpoint of and the culture of the area that they were written in will also kind of like have an influence over the format and the content of the grimoire.
Okay, well, that's very interesting, and I'd like to open it up to questions if Trey or Mark or Devin have any questions.
I'm kind of interested in a few things there I heard from both him and Robin. So it's like Robin has to deal with, like, energy work and that type of thing. I can totally empathize with that. I do massage therapy myself, so I incorporate a lot of body energy work in what I do, and I know the power in that. But then I also listened to him, and he's talking about, like, kind of the spiritual development aspect of things, and I can kind of see how that could be something to get into, like, hacking reality, per se. And I mentioned that, like, he's, like, a white magic, and my background's a bit into, like, network security, and, like, if you think of, like, hacking, like, if we're hacking reality, there's white hats, red hats, and black hats, right? Black hats are the guys that, like, steal your credit card information. That could be, like, a black sorcerer using, like, hacks or spells or whatever you want to call it to execute these programs to, like, you know, hack reality. And I think there's really something to that. And spiritual development is, like, you know, a muscle that you can, like, grow. And if you're focused on it and you're working on it, you could, I think, like, through the subconscious or through ultra-transpersonal conscious means, I think that's something, I have potential there. And so listening to everybody speak there, I'm really interested to hear more about what they have to say as far as, you know, the magic or sorcery has to deal with in practical means.
Okay, yeah. And that's interesting because, yeah, there are, like, in the practice of magic, you want to use the kind of a paradigm of the reality hacking, you know, there's different methods, like magic. It's such a broad thing, but there's different methods of, like, where you train yourself to interact with the non-physical world, that in order to be able to do these things, you have to reach a certain level of development in yourself. Like, for example, we'll talk about, like, say, the humors or the four elemental aspects of the body, or in the mind. There's one pretty well-known magical training manual called Initiation into Hermetics by Franz Bardon. And one of the first exercises that you're taught to master is the astral soul mirror. And what that is you'll take four columns, the fire, earth, water, and air, and you'll list out your negative and positive character traits that fit in with the elements in each column. And over time, through doing introspection and learning these character traits, you'll begin to learn a sort of, like, elemental mental alchemy, where you'll transmute them and change them in order to make yourself a better person. And in the process of making yourself a better person, then you'll become more balanced in these four elemental parts of yourself, and in becoming more balanced and more harmonized, the philosophy teaches that animal magnetism will begin to increase, and your ability to influence the world around you will increase due to your level of character development.
Interesting. So, when I'm listening to you there, it reminds me a lot of, like, some personality psychology things, like Jungian archetypes type of thing, where, like, you have all these columns, and there might be strengths and weaknesses in each one. And you might have, like, an archetypal kind of character trait that fits in with those. And then you're saying, like, that kind of paints a bigger picture, the salt of, like, what you are on a more spiritual level things, and then you can work at kind of like growing those specific areas that you might be weakness in to be a whole holistic, more balanced and magical person.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
Cool.
And I think it was really interesting. I was speaking with a friend of mine yesterday, and I said, do me a favor and like our Facebook page because we have a fledgling podcast called Sorcerer's Dictionary. And the response was, oh, I don't mess with sorcerers. I said, do you think all sorcerers are bad? Well, yes. And it's like it sounds like there are many different facets of sorcery, some from the good, the white sorcerers that are trying to do basically spiritual development. Am I correct, Jason, on that one? Is that the white sorcerers are interested in spiritual development, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a big emphasis on the spiritual development aspect of it.
Right, and then then we also have the black sorcerers, which I think may have gotten, how can I put it, too much publicity. Would you say that, Jason? The black sorcerers and the cloaks and the half moons and all that stuff, double bubble toil and trouble. I mean, you're right out of Shakespeare and everything. I mean, the black sorcerers,
right,
or the dark sorcerers have gotten too much. I mean, I guess they've captured the dark imagination of a lot of people. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. And I think that a lot of that too can be traced back to the fear of witches and magic from the Middle Ages and being associated with being in league with the devil and things like that, and the church, which I have nothing against like Christianity, but just the historical church that, and you know, the fear of magic as being of essentially of the devil and demonic.
And maybe a lot of what we call magic or what you call magic, and I don't want to cause a problem here, but it might be more akin to positive energy work. Do you think that might, and Robin, I'd like to maybe get your take on this, because, you know, we're beginning to see that maybe some of this sorcery and all that has more to do with spiritual development and positive things that can happen. And I'd like, that's a toss-up for $25 from the old college bowl. That's just a toss-up. Does anyone have any comments about that? Robin, do you have any comments about that?
No, I'm just listening to the discussion, I think. Like I said, I'm interested to see and hear what he has to say. I mean, I think it's very interesting.
And that maybe this is a little bit of a different take on what we might have called, you know, just because you have a name, sorcery, it might be perhaps misunderstood. I've learned that in the last 2 weeks talking to Jason. And it's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, no, I
to
find
learn.
It very interesting. I don't want him to think that I'm not trying to come off that I'm negative or not interested. I'm actually very interested in it, in what he has to say on it. I'd like to hear more about it.
Well, great. All right. Dr. Trey, do you have any comments at this point?
No, but I've got like a million questions for you, Jason. May I ask
okay,
half
sure.
a million, maybe? Okay.
Maybe.
How,
yeah, half a million.
How did, how did you become a sorcerer? Are you born to it? Are you drawn to it? Do you go to sorcery school? Do you get books? How did you? I mean, when you were 8 years old, were you a sorcerer? Did you figure out that you? How did your personal development becoming a sorcerer begin?
Well, you caught me. See, I'm actually from Hogwarts, but
okay.
No, I've always had this sort of mentality. This is just from my personal journey with it. I've always had this sort of mentality, and just a more openness to things being different. And I don't know, I've always just kind of thought that there would have been a way to hack reality. And of course you hear about magic and stuff when your kids look TV shows or whatever, movies like Harry Potter. But I was very sheltered from a lot of stuff like that. But that might also play into it somehow. But I guess what really kicked it off was when I started getting into mystical Christianity, like the charismatics and things like that, because I had already had a lot of thoughts about belief being a big key in changing reality. And I know there's certain psychological aspects to that too. And then I think The Matrix, when I first watched The Matrix, it kind of really solidified that. But and then when I got into mystical Christianity and I just started having these experiences, and it just propelled me further. But as far as the actual, to get past the gradient there, because it's kind of just a long, growing process, I'd say probably when I first really started looking into what we're talking about as sorcery and spells and energy development and things like that, was when I first started looking into something called chaos magic back in 2015, because I had finally broke away from a lot of the dogma, because I believed in my personal connection with the Holy Spirit and what the Holy Spirit taught me or was telling me, and not what the church was telling me or anything like that. And what I basically got from the Holy Spirit was practice developing your psychic ability, something that I've always was always taught was And so I just started Googling stuff and came across chaos magic and joined some groups on Facebook about chaos magic. But Peter Carroll's Liber Null and Psychonaut, it's a book about chaos magic, and just started looking into how to do experiments with it. And I started experimenting, and then, eventually I decided I wanted to get into some, deeper stuff. And what started that was about a year and a half ago when I got Franz Barden's Initiation to Hermetics, what I mentioned earlier with the astral soul mirror and balancing. And once I got into that, it was just a real explosion. For the last, I say year and a half, it's been almost 2 years now. Well, no, still probably about a year and a half. But yeah, it's been just kind of like an explosion from that point. And I've just been studying and practicing daily ever since. And
is there an academy of sorcery like Hogwarts?
No.
Or do you read books? How do you study?
I read books. I try to find books. I look through their bibliographies. I try to find who in my judgment are some of the most authoritative and really well educated people in the field. A guy named Stephen Skinner and Jake Stratton Kent, and someone that I had mentioned to John earlier about a guy named Jason Miller. I started gobbling up their books and looking through the bibliographies and just really sort of thinking about it and thinking about where to go next and just where I was drawn, and then practice. But no Hogwarts, not yet anyways.
The weekend workshops,
self-teach. Do I know?
Well,
no weekend workshops.
Trey, I will tell you this, because Jason has got a Facebook group called Cullman Cabal, and that is it's basically a study group and just a group that gets together on the internet that talks about things like this. I'm actually a member. I joined a couple of days ago, and I found some really fascinating things. So, Jason, what you're doing is you're trying to promote people talking about this and thinking about this, correct?
Yeah.
Jason,
may I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Jason, because I'm just going from my own experiences, I really am interested. Did you notice, even as a young child, like tendencies for some of this stuff? Because I know, like with myself, even when I was like toddler and, you know, 4 and 5, it's almost like my brain knew that I could do this stuff, even if I didn't remember it, because we have multiple lifetimes. And all of these lifetimes, right, we do various things in each lifetime. And so I guess my question to you is, you know, the soul remembers even when the brain doesn't. So when I was a child, I would just start doing things and it would change situations. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, how did I do that? I had no clue. And I didn't have anybody to teach me or to show me. I couldn't even find books about it back then. But my question is, did you notice these tendencies with yourself from the time you were little?
Yes, I did, actually. I'm pretty sure this is... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm not surprised at all. That's why I was wondering.
Yeah. With the way, like, I thought about things was a little bit different. I remember, and I think this may actually be normal in young kids. I'm not sure, but I just remember vividly being able to think, like, oh, I exist. What is existence? And then, you know, all these different, I guess, meta questions like that I don't really know how to word. But then whenever I got a little bit older, like one of the things in chaos magic, for example, is writing out statements of intent and then removing the vowels and stuff, and you can turn it into this gibberish mantra that you say to channel your intent or draw it into a sigil or anything like that. But I had ideas of making spells and doing that. I never actually did it because I was too freaked out about doing it. But when I was a kid, I had done this a few times, and then I would like get rid of it and be like, no, that's bad and evil. But yeah, and then found out later that is actually something that is practiced in chaos magic.
Well, if I could jump in here for a sec, just listen to you guys, and even going back to Trey's question there, if it's something that you learned, I know in psychology a basic principle is we learn from experience, and we have things from innate knowledge, innate being like what we're born with, right? And some of these things, I think, we're pre-programmed to be able to do these things, but we obviously have to have the experiential means to learn and to put into practice, right? But if you, like, look at kids, they naturally just dance by themselves, right? No one's taught them to dance. They just do it, right? And there's other types of things, behaviors like that. So if we're looking at sorcery or psychic phenomenon in a holistic sense, I think it's something that children have the ability to do, and it's natural maybe more to them, but then we either unlearn or we don't learn the basic skills, like life skills in general, to develop it to the next level, which potentially these hermetic practices, these types of practices could take you to the next level and actually develop like a bodybuilder developing their muscles and their brain or their transpersonal psychological ability, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, I always look at intelligence as a rubber band. Some people are born with longer rubber bands. Some are short. But you can have someone with a short rubber band who stretches their rubber band, which can eventually get longer than someone that was born with a long rubber band. So I think that goes to the same principle where you have some innate ability, skill, intelligence. And if you exercise it, there's a good chance you can get better at it. And if you don't, it will become withered and wasted and atrophied.
And that kind of like metaphor of flexibility, that kind of goes towards, I think, the chaos. It's like lack of structure. Things that are too structured are too brittle, right? If you maintain that elastic band and some flexibility, that means it's kind of like the bonds between things are a bit more fluid. And maybe there's something to understanding these things on a higher nature, working with these basic physical nature of things, but hacking it in our minds, in our reality. I think there's something next level to this. Absolutely.
Jason, when you say you're a reality hacker, could you give an example or two of some realities that you have hacked and you have have changed outcomes, or you have changed the perception of whatever objects, information, whatever it is that you do, what affects in our realities? What changes have you induced?
Yeah, I was actually talking about this earlier with John. The first, I guess you could say, spell or ritual or whatever that I did that I can name specifically, it was back in 2015. It was based off of the chaos magic idea of creating sigils, which is where you write out the statement of intent, remove the vowels and any repeating letters, and organize the remaining letters into an abstract symbol that the conscious mind no longer recognizes, but the subconscious mind does. And that's where the key is to causing the change, is in the subconscious. So you do that, and then you achieve what is called gnosis, or an altered state of consciousness. And then you forget about the working, and it manifests. Well, what I did was, I wanted to see my friends again, like my high school, friends that I used to go hang out with, party with, all that kind of stuff. And it had been a long time since I had seen them, and so, I was like, I want to see these guys again. So, I basically crafted a sigil. I didn't do the statement of intent method. I just tried a little something different. I drew some random symbols that to me resonated with, my friends and our times together. And at the top, I wrote HOM3Y, which was from a dream I had when we were all hanging out and stuff. So it was kind of like a link to that moment in time in my subconscious. But, and then I took it to this park that I had experienced certain paranormal phenomena at beforehand. And I did the ritual there where I put my headphones in, and I just listened to the song Homies by ICP, and because that was like one of our songs. And I just kind of like danced around, and I envisioned the whole experience of being around everyone again. Like all my friends, we were hanging out, and just having a good time. And then when the song was over, I visualized this feeling going into an orb of energy. And I channeled it into my breath, into my chest, and I breathed it onto the sigil. And then I lit the sigil on the little piece of paper that the sigil was on. I lit it on fire and let the smoke and the ash rise up as my intent being sent off into the universe to become manifest. And then I did my best to not think about it. I went home. And I was working overnight at the time, so this was kind of early in the morning when I did this, and then I went home and slept through the morning into the day. And when I woke up, I just got on Facebook and was just scrolling around, and I noticed a post that one of my friends had put up that said, I don't have any friends because people are horrible. And then I looked through the comments, and one of my other friends was like, no, you don't have any friends because you won't talk to us. And just read through the conversation in the line in the comments, and everyone in that friend group was jumping in there saying, hey, we need to meet up again. Yeah, we need to have a reunion. One of the guys who was in Texas was like, hey, I'll be coming home for the summer here in a couple weeks. We should all have a party. I'll bring drinks. I'll bring food, et cetera, all this stuff. And we ended up having that gather. Like, I saw this going on. I was like, there's no way. And, then we ended up having that little gathering at my father-in-law's house, and we all were just hanging out and having a good time. It was just like I envisioned. I was like, there's no way. This is crazy. This actually happened. But, and then after that, it really propelled my interest into diving deeper into this stuff, figuring out what was going on, why it worked, what else may be going on, and different things like that. But,
do you find that you can change your reality, or can you change other people's reality? Could someone come to you and ask you to do some sorcery to change a circumstance or a condition in their life, and you can help them do that? Or is it just channeled to your reality?
Well, in my personal experience, I haven't done much of that kind of stuff. I mean, I have done stuff that did affect other people's reality. It wasn't so much as like someone coming to me and asking for help with an issue. That may have happened like a couple times, but I wouldn't be able to name a specific instance. But I've actually done some baneful magic in that regards before, some, I guess, what would be considered black magic when I was younger and, a lot more full of anger. But it would still be in my immediate reality. But I don't really have much experience with it, except what you're talking about, in the sense of, like, changing someone else's life in that sense. At least nothing that I could name right off the bat in a specific instance that this had happened. But I have done things like said spells and things for friends before, like as like certain things had come up.
John, okay, I think to answer your question, like just from hearing your question here, can you affect other people's reality just like you can affect your own? You know, we can do that in the physical world, you know, and the scam artists and things, they're there, they can affect other people's reality by emptying your bank accounts, right? I think that ability is there on a psychic level as well. But as well, we can help people in their reality. We can influence others by both physical means and what we consider like transpersonal. But that's just beyond our current knowledge of what is actually physical. If we look at the whole operating system and the whole programming involved, it's beyond our perception. Maybe, yeah, we can influence other people just as we can in the physical world, right? But metaphysical means.
Right.
Well, the question was basically, certainly when you had your experience and you brought your friends together for a reunion, that affected their lives as well as it affected your life. But it seemed to have emanated from you. But if I don't know, somebody wants a love potion or something, or they want, is that something that you do? Is that not what your sorcery is about?
I can do stuff like that, and I have done it a couple times, like either like make like an enchanted piece of jewelry or something like that that would, you know, bring protection, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah.
I have a question for you. So it sounds like you're using symbols or something concrete in the physical world to then anchor yourself into some subconscious. I heard you were talking before about the whole rearranging letters and that type of thing. And just listening to that, it reminds me a lot of hypnosis. And I know, John, you have a background in hypnosis, and we've talked about things like this, where things like neuro-linguistic programming, you have certain linguistic anchors, like through syntactical means that are being used that then can then snap people into subconscious cues, snap them into a current state of being. And I could see how, like, almost like a ritualistic thing, if you have these set up in the right way, it's just your own way of anchoring yourself. And I do this all the time in my own work in massage. Like I have my own little routines and rituals before I do a massage. And I just know it works. There's no explanation or whatever. It's just my subconscious, and then I do a good job, right? And if I'm not in that state of mind, then I don't do a good job. And I could see that how that in both something like hypnosis or something that could be involved in magic or transpersonal states of being, how we have these like physical anchors, either through words, linguistics, symbols of any type of means. I think there's something to that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So like, if you can elaborate on that, that'd be cool.
There's actually, that's kind of like what the whole idea of sympathetic magic is kind of based off of. Doing things in a symbolic fashion that represents something else, using like the physical things to kind of anchor those more subtle and symbolic things.
Cool. Even like basic geometries. Have you ever worked with that? Like geometrical patterns of, like, say, sacred geometries. Is there something to that that's affecting us on a subconscious level that we could manifest these things?
I would say I believe there is. I haven't done much practical stuff with it. You know, just theoretically, I could see it being used, though.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we've got a guest. We've got a guest that's popped on, and we've got another host that we haven't heard from. First of all, Professor Wrestling Steve Logan from Richmond has come on. How are you doing tonight, Steve?
I'm doing good. Just listening to the show, and I had a bunch of questions. Probably, was there like one public figure, maybe a celebrity, that was like a gateway into looking into chaos magic or other forms of magic? I know David Bowie was somebody that like used a lot of occult imagery and Kabbalah and those themes. Was there any similar experience for you?
Not really a celebrity or anything. It's kind of like what I mentioned earlier about the mystical Christianity. That actually is one of the things that got me into like Kabbalah early on, was just kind of like just the mystical side of, you know, the Judeo-Christian religion and, you know, just looking deeper into that. So I guess you know, not really any, like, celebrity or anything like that, but it's just kind of, like, part of my own, like, personal beliefs, like, what I saw whenever I read the Bible myself versus what, you know, I was told and things like that.
So something like Gnosticism was, like, an interest?
Not really Gnosticism. I never really found out about Gnosticism until much later. It was just kind of like, actually what I did was I found the chronological order of the New Testament, and then I kind of like immersed myself through like reading the book of Acts and then alongside with the corresponding letter, like letters by the different apostles that were written within the different time periods of that, and just and reading the Gospels of Jesus and like noticing little things in there, like where, like, or like in the Gospels where Jesus would say things that, like, that we are gods, or, you know, that the kingdom of God is within you, and just little things you never really hear about, but they're ultimately like profound, and that, just running into those and then just exploring deeper, just really, I guess that kind of propelled me into really looking into a lot more of this stuff, looking into different religions and seeing how it's all connected and, you know, how that relates to, you know, this process of doing magic.
Interesting. I guess what I was referring to was I love the imagery being used as an Easter egg in art and some musicians.
Okay, gotcha.
Actors, maybe, even there's people that analyze like occult imagery and art, and it's like, man, you don't even notice who uses what and what could be determined as chaos magic. Like I've seen like people analyze Crispin Glover as a chaos magician. And I'm just, or it's just crazy. Alan Moore, comic book writer, he claims to be a magician. It's just like you see a lot of people that are big name people that just are have an interest in it, and it's just interesting how many people pop up. And then is there any groups? Like you mentioned Jesus earlier. I'm sorry I'm all over the place. But have you taken an interest in Golden Dawn? Because I've heard them even use they've mentioned Jesus positively in their messages, in their content on YouTube as well, the Hermetic Order of Golden Dawn. Any interest in groups like that?
Yeah, that was actually, and when I was talking at the beginning of the show about how I define a sorcerer as opposed to, like, the witches and the magician kind of goes along the lines of, like, Golden Dawn, Lodge-type magic. But I did take an interest in that for a little bit, like, when I was first starting my exploration of magic, and that was part of the reason of looking into the Golden Dawn practices, and then Aleister Crowley and Thelema and the OTO and just all their like different sort of like spiritual development practices. But there was definitely an interest in the Golden Dawn and those like early like 19th and 20th century lodge magical orders and stuff. I kind of like, I guess in a way, like moved on, like that came later after Chaos Magic, but it, I don't know, as I began looking more into like those orders and everything like that, you know, they knew a lot for their time, like, but a lot of like stuff is like kind of surfaced. And, there was an interest there for a little bit in those orders, like the Golden Dawn and the OTO, and Aleister Crowley's Thelema.
Do you think you can get a lot out of studying by yourself versus lodge magic or vice versa?
I think it kind of depends on what your goals are. I definitely think that they're like the methods work because I've used them before. I've done the lesser banishing ritual of a pentagram for 8 months along with middle pillar. And I felt there was a definite personal power increase, power over my emotions, power over my attention span, you know, I felt more centered. There was definitely a change in my own personal power, my own personal balance, I guess you'd say. But, I think it really just kind of, like, depends. Yeah, go ahead.
So, historically speaking, you know, shamans of the age or whatever, they use some type of catalyst to get them into this transpersonal state, whether it's, like, you know, something they ingest or something else like that. Do you believe there's any, or have you had experience in that type of pharmacological agents in the kind of as a tool to access these like subconscious or transpersonal states? Because historically speaking, that's always been a major factor in it. And I think also if we look at just the tools we have now, as far as modern medicine goes and everything like that, is there any way that can assist as being like essentially a catalyst to these types of things?
Oh yeah, like I definitely think that the whole entheogenic sort of the catalyst can definitely be used because, you know, it opens you up to different perspectives of reality and like the whole the unconscious, like it's kind of like the filters being removed. It changes your mental state and your patterns of perception.
Yeah, the
and,
lens of perception, right? The lens
of
perception.
And,
right?
Yeah, it changes your lens of perception and kind of opens you up to these, because it's kind of like if you think of it in like dimensions, you know, like we can't directly perceive higher dimensions, but they can be perceived in patterns. And when you're more, you kind of, they kind of open you up to more of these patterns. And that's kind of like personally where I believe that in a sense, a lot of the spiritual entities reside is on these higher, in these higher dimensions and these different like sort of worlds that are more aligned with patterns.
Yeah.
And,
to relate it back to the whole metaphor about like we're working in this computer operating system and things, potentially introducing into ourselves like something like a upload or a like insert disk into us, right? And then uploading program into us. Potentially, there could be some things that either clears disk space, or you know uploads the next level of operating system in our inner being. And I think the most natural way is literally through plants and through pharmacological agents of different things. And there's a pattern of our own evolution in the plants and things we use, right, as tools, right? So potentially looking at it in a very shamanic way, like historically speaking, where there was like always like the shamanic kind of high priest thing. And then if we bring that to now modern age of technology and everything, potentially there's something in line, and I'm not condoning drug use, obviously, but just like nootropics or things that can open our mind using nature in a way. Is there anything that you use in that regard?
I have used, and this is a little bit different than the chemical aspect, but from the animistic perspective, the belief that, you know, all things have their own sort of consciousness, their own spirit in their life, I've used different plants that would kind of alter my state of consciousness. Like, let's say, I mean, I have used mushrooms before, but also what I've used, I guess, more recently, be things like mugwort tea or using that's just to be the more direct sort of ingestion manner. That there's other ways that I've used plants.
Yeah,
or
I use theanine. I don't know if you've ever used that. It's extract from, like, I think, believe green tea, and I take 2 capsules of those, and I feel like I'm more mentally clear, focused, and it's not like it's a drug or technically it might be like a little bit, but it's just like tea, right? Tea's not a drug, right? But it's the extract from it. And I feel whenever I take those, I'm like more mental clarity. I got more creative energy. I got more things. I feel like I'm more just in tune with a certain like aspect of my consciousness. And I see some potential there if like as a catalyst, like we were talking about before, as accessing
right.
these types of things.
Yeah.
Right. Hey,
like you can.
And I tell you what, before we run out of time, I do want to say, Devin, are you still around?
I'm here. I'm enjoying the conversation.
Good. Do you have a question as we have 5 minutes left in our show? Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Well, just kind of,
you know, we've talked on here about my friend Amy, who passed away earlier, and she identified as a witch, but she was very much into the dark, you know, the dark magic. She was primarily interested in kind of like revenge spells and things like that. So I'm really inspired to hear your story and that you did kind of start out with, you know, kind of pursuing some of that. But, you know, what was really the factor that made you change and want to do exclusively like, you know, white sorcery or more positive magic?
Do what now? Sorry, I didn't catch that last part.
Yeah, you said earlier when you were younger, you kind of did dabble with like the more dark magic. But I was just wondering if there
right.
was any particular catalyst that kind of made you change your course and focus on the white sorcery.
Right. Well, I've always been kind of interested in spiritual development. The first, like whenever I started off doing that stuff, it was more or less, it wasn't really learned. It was like kind of like what we were talking about earlier, more of an innate thing. When I would just get really angry and I would like kind of like throw my anger at people and then they would have bad things happen to them. But, so to speak. As far as like, I guess a catalyst for spiritual development was just, you know, wanting to be a better person, wanting to kind of in some ways change the world. Cause like, I mean, I have really different beliefs than most people, especially as far as like spiritual development goes. Like it's not just so much as like developing a sort of moral, I mean, that's definitely part of it. You become more moral through it, but it kind of comes through like being more connected with others and, you know, being more understanding of others. And, you know, like I still, like, even now though, like I have nothing against like offensive magic, but I do not believe it is to be taken lightly. You know, just like in martial arts, you learn how to, you know, really mess someone up, but you don't go around just breaking arms of people that look at you the wrong way. You know, there has
That's
to be
analogy.
A very, very serious, like a very serious, you know, need for it. You know, like I've actually helped people with bindings and banishing spells before, because not just what they do is like, it's kind of like a self-defense, because the binding makes it where someone can't harm them. It doesn't harm the person that it is considered an attack or an offensive spell, but it's not like you're just completely, like, destroying someone's life or anything like that. And, you know, but, yeah, it's definitely very situational. It really depends on what's going on. And what I just kind of hold to is that kind of, like, unwritten code of ethics, just, you know, treating others the way you want to be treated. And, like, in martial arts, you know, you're not just going to mess up anyone, but you have the skill you need. You have the sword to defend yourself. And a good analogy, I've read one in one of my books, actually, is that, you know, when you have your sword to your enemy's throat, then you have the power to forgive. You're no longer a victim, but you don't have to act out in anger.
Cool. Wow, that is incredible. And I tell you what, we're out of time for this week, but definitely we're going to have you back. Jason, it's been a lot of fun. You have taught us a lot. I know that we've learned a lot about what you do, and we'd like to have you back. I'll do a call around with all of our hosts, and I believe that they're all going to be excited about what you brought to us tonight. And next week, John LeMay, it's the first Monday of the month, so we'll have John LeMay, the celebrated paranormal author from Roswell, New Mexico, and just so glad to have everybody here with us. Robin, Dr. Trey Donaway, our Devin Tate, our guest Steve Logan from Pro Wrestling Interviews, and we're just so glad to have everybody here. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week on the one, the only, Scary Cast.